Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Welcome, dear listeners. I'm Jonathan Carlin.
And I'm Benjamin Carlin.
And we invite you to join us through the Gryffindor, your one-way ticket to the enchanting world of Harry Potter. So grab your wands and dust off your broomsticks and join us as we unlock the treasures behind Chamber of Secrets, Chapter 6, Gilderoy Lockhart.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. It must have been such a challenge to not use the picture of Gilderoy Lockhart. Is it the previous? No, it's not even from the previous. It's Flourish
it's
and
chapter
Blotts.
Chapter 4. Yeah, Flourish and Blotts. So it is so funny that, the chapter titled Gilderoy Lockhart does not have the picture of Gilderoy Lockhart, even though that picture is used back in chapter 4, which is like not something that you would pick up on if you were just like listening to it or like didn't have, or if there weren't pictures on it. But it does feel like an intentional slight at Lockhart, if you ask me.
Yeah, there's like some big like Mike Wazowski energy here where it's like it's literally Lockhart's chapter. It's his namesake chapter. And for the chapter art, instead of getting this glorious, bright Witch Weekly award-winning smile, you get this like half-naked root baby plant head thing.
Yes, you do.
In the form of a mandrake.
Mandrake. We actually saw like a mandrake in London. Did we not?
Yes, we did. This was like one of like kind of like interesting fun facts when we were doing. We were brought out by Google Arts and Culture to the History of Magic exhibit at the British Library.
That is correct.
Got all the deets. And while we were there, we were working with Google Arts and Culture to basically create a video that was kind of like showcasing some of the like early inspiration for specific creations inside of the saga.
Yeah.
And one of those is just simply the fact that a mandrake is a real plant. Like, this is not like a magical invention. And I think sort of where the inspiration was pulled from is that the root system or the bulbs of the mandrake plant can actually like look human-like in appearance.
Yeah, they kind of look, like sort of like what you see in the movie, where it like not like this particular chapter art image where it just looks like a small infant human child, but more like sort of a root baby that has like a cringy face or something.
The movie's depiction of it is actually like kind of spot on, actually.
Yeah.
So pretty good in that regard. Actually, this whole chapter, I would say, is like the film adaptation. The film adaptation of it is true to form.
There are a lot of things that are very very accurate. There's a few things that as I was reading, I was like, that does, wait a minute, that the movie got this a little bit wrong. Like, I think in herbology class, I think like the Slytherins are there.
That's
in
true.
The movie.
That's
and I
true.
Yeah. I want to say like in the movie, like Neville like faints when he hears the mandrakes or whatever.
Okay, that's a good point as
which
well.
Which I despise on two accounts. One, because in this chapter, the earmuffs are like magical and like no sound should be allowed to get in at all.
Yes.
And two, if anyone's excelling at herbology, it's Neville.
I know.
So I thought that was, those are the only things that really stood out to me, particularly different. But otherwise, a lot of this is like very spot on
from
the movie.
No, it is. And probably even in the movie, what they were going for was trying to set you up for that. Like, why is it always me? Like when Neville's like, hanging from the chandelier or whatever, it's like, because he also just fainted. Like, apparently that's same day in herbology class, but it seems ridiculous to me that Neville was ever not excelling in the greenhouses, because that's like his domain.
Exactly.
So anyway, yeah, so that's sort of like a brief overview as we enter this particular chapter, where just lots of really fun things and probably some of our all-time favorite Lockhart moments.
Oh happen. My gosh. This, as I was reading it, like this chapter in particular stood out to me as like the one, like when we were kids, we would have to drive up to, we live in Virginia, and we have to drive up to New York to visit our grandparents for like, you know, summer holidays or Christmas or whatever.
Yep.
And on one such occasion, after we had read several of the books, our dad managed to either borrow cassettes or the CD audiobooks of Harry Potter.
Yeah, we had them somehow before we ever properly received them. Because I know that your wife, Beth, always gifted them to you as like a, yes. like something when you guys were dating in college. So
yeah.
Clearly we didn't have those CDs in our possession yet, but we did somehow have the Jim Dale audiobooks yes. earlier for brief stints.
Yeah, and it was great. And there were, I mean, we would listen to it and like, so we'd like listen, the whole family would listen to it, and it was like every time we got in the car, I'd be like, everyone be quiet, we're listening, geez.
Yes.
But there was one particular line by Jim Dale that just became like the family inside joke, and that, I mean, because he says it, there's like three occasions where he says it, and it's always hilarious, but it's every time Lockhart shows up to Harry, and he just goes, Harry, Harry, Harry.
It's like, what? It's why like, is he
it's so funny the way he reads it in the audiobook.
And it really, no, it really is. And it's like comical, because on like one page, there's like two paragraphs back to back where he does it. And it's like, I mean, this chapter in particular is even one as well where you might need to like wonder if Lockhart has told his own lies for so long that he has started to believe them.
That almost has to be the case, because like they're like right when we meet him for the first time in this chapter, he is like boasting about how he has met several Whomping Willows in his past and knows so much about them and was just giving Professor Sprout some tips. And I don't want to indicate that I'm better at herbology than her or anything. And it's just like, dude, you are surprisingly eager to put yourself like front and center of this like easily disproven lie.
Yes, that's exactly it. It's like the thing that makes the least amount of sense. I mean, lots of like Lockhart is like ridiculous, but you would think that someone who has made such a career out of being a successful con man, that he would be much more cognizant of like showcasing his ineptitude in front of people who actually know.
I know. It's like, why are you going up? Like, don't go out of your way to prove to someone who definitely knows about Whomping Willows to be like, I'm so good at this, especially because like, it sounds like he was out there helping Professor helping in quotes, like helping with the Whomping Willow without an audience, you know?
Right.
It's like,
right.
You know, who are you proving this to? Her? Cause like, no, you're not. Like, are you just so self-important at this point that like you genuinely believe you're helping, but then at the end, like he still knows he's stealing the stories. So it's like, what are you doing, man?
He's just remarkably delusional. And you're right, though. I mean, it's really funny even just going back to that, like to what we say, like, because we always talk about how much we like love Lockhart as, you know, as a character.
Oh.
Even like our Wizarding Candle subscription, just a little plug for that real quick. Like that kicked off the year. The first candle of the year for the month of January was called Pretty Obvious. Like we led with Lockhart, you know, yeah. as oh. like a...
I think it's hilarious. That candle, by the way, is like my favorite candle that we've done. The Pretty Obvious one.
Yeah, that one's your favorite.
Yes,
yeah.
It is so good. We have moved on past January. If you're interested in getting in on the Wizarding Candle Club subscription, it is still available. We are now in month two, where the candle scent of the month is called Love Potion.
It is called Love Potion. It's kind of like a spearminty, which
it does.
Like when you first like smell it or sniff it, you're sort of like, this is a strange kind of scent for a candle, but I have to say it burns really nice.
It does burn really nice. And if you're wondering like, how do we land on like spearmint for Love Potion? It is because it is one of the things that like Hermione smells when she smells the Love Potion.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, so that's the inspiration for the smell of this one. And as ever, of course, it has like a little collectible charm whenever you're done burning it.
Yes. Yes. Indeed.
Yes. So, you know, wizardingcandles.com if you're interested. And I will like, we actually sold out of the first run. So we had to like, get more oil to make more candles, but we'd have very limited amounts. So if you want them, like, go do it, because I'm afraid we're going to sell out again.
I know. Yeah, there's a high possibility of that. So definitely go and check it out. But anyway, so we, yeah. So what I was going to say, though, is that for, like, this chapter in particular is one that our family quotes all the time.
It is.
And Lockhart, you know, is like one of these characters that he's such like a buffoon. But like, as I'm actually reading this chapter, like page by page, I'm like, I hate this guy.
Oh, like, I mean, yes, that's, I'm like, he's terrible. Like, he's funny to laugh at as a character, but as a person, he's the worst.
He's just the worst.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. No. And it's really interesting as well, because we talked a little bit last chapter about the like the Dumbledore's big plan connotations here, where like Dumbledore has hired Lockhart to demonstrate to Harry the dangers of like fame and all that type of stuff. And so when Harry arrives on the flying car, you know, to kick off this school year, there's the line from the previous chapter that says, Harry's whole body went numb. Dumbledore was looking unusually grave. And this is like when he enters the room to kind of like dole out punishment or hear their side of the story for like, you know, what they were thinking.
Yeah.
And so, you know, our big thing here is that like Dumbledore's like, no, like, man, you had 1 year of success at school and then you immediately let it get to your head.
Like, yeah.
And so that was sort of like our mind blown moment from the last chapter. But then even in this chapter, when Lockhart comes over to him, he's like saying, you know, like he, like Lockhart himself is commenting on like, that's such a me move, isn't it? Like trying to get front page attention. You got a taste of it and now you need more.
Right.
It's like, so like even it's like, you know, exactly what Dumbledore is worried is happening is matching what Lockhart assumes happened based on his own influence over
one.
Yeah, based
Harry on
James
what
Potter.
He would do. Yes.
Yes, exactly. So it's like, yeah. It's like, so that I definitely think that that is like what is happening confirmed.
Yeah. Yeah. In terms of like how Dumbledore is feeling.
Yes. Yes. Yep. Definitely.
I absolutely agree with you. I noted that as well. I also thought, well, we'll come back to it. Okay. I guess as we get there, I suppose we could just go do our chat, our, you know,
Our comb through.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's just dive into it. So we start with Harry's first day at school. He heads down to breakfast, where I thought this is funny. He just like, you know, I always love when there's a list of food at the Great Hall, because it always makes me so hungry.
Yes. Yeah,
but on this particular morning, there's like porridge and kippers and toast and eggs and bacon. And then before the end of the paragraph, it's like Harry's down there talking about Harry only just started his porridge when, sure enough, and I'm always like, Harry, why do you always choose the blandest food?
Yeah,
like it's always a baked potato or porridge. Like, yeah. Did you have some dry toast as well? Like, come right, on, right. Man.
He's not going for the toast because it came pre-buttered.
I know, right? You know? There's eggs and bacon there, sir.
Right, yeah. If there's eggs and bacon on the table and you're not going for eggs and bacon, then like I'm worried.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like, what are you? What I don't, yeah. I don't get it.
Yeah.
There's also, I love how like the last book ended with Neville being this like hero of 10 points that gets Gryffindor the house cup, and it's better to stand up to your enemies. And it's like right away, it's like, yeah, forget that. Neville's an accident prone boy with the worst memory ever. And immediately it's like Harry describes him as the boy with the worst memory anyone had ever met, and then like one sentence later he's like, I forgot stuff. It's like, yeah, okay, so any credibility Neville built up in the last book, forget that.
I know, but it's so sad too, because like once you find out how capable Neville actually is, you're just like, man, what all is he shouldering?
Oh, I know.
You know, it's like, that it's like causing him to just like just be so unwilling to like, you know, I mean, not unwilling, but like unable to like rise above everything else.
Oh, I know. I mean, you get a little bit of a taste on the next page where Ron receives the howler in the mail from Mrs. Weasley, but then Neville's the one who sort of fills you, the audience, in on like, oh, you better open that quick. It's worse if you don't. My grand sent me one once and I ignored it, and whew, it was horrible. But like, when I read that, I was like, I wonder what she sent him the howler for, because it must have been last year, right?
Ooh,
because like,
yikes.
And whatever it was, surely they all heard it. This can't have been the first time in their entire first year that anyone got a howler, right?
I know, but you can even sort of imagine that, because Neville is not exactly known for his like misbehaving kind of behaviors. So like, I'm immediately kind of getting some like very like Encanto, Abuela, generational trauma. I'm disappointed in you for not excelling more because you should have all of your dad's magical abilities, and why aren't you living up to expectations? Like it doesn't seem like Gran would be sending him a howler for like like, you got in trouble and that's unacceptable, and so now I am embarrassing you for it. It seems more like Neville would have in some way embarrassed her.
Yeah. And well, I was trying to think, because like the last year, there is an occasion where Neville loses Gryffindor 50 points.
That's true.
By being
true.
Out of bed.
That's true.
But it does seem like Harry would have been present for the Howler.
Yeah,
at that point, or like, is there a like? Does Harry end up in the hospital wing recently after that? Like, I was trying to think: was there a situation where Harry would not have been present for whatever this was?
Well, he is in the hospital wing, at the end of the year.
Yeah,
and that would have been in the interim time where, Neville's own actions the night that they went through the trap door wouldn't have been regarded as heroic yet.
She have heard about that? And
well, there's the line from Dumbledore, like, it's a complete secret, so naturally the whole school knows.
Right.
Yeah. But that would seem like a strange one.
That would seem like a strange one, unless it was just sort of like Gran found out at that moment that, like, yep, Gryffindor finished last place and Neville lost us 50 points earlier in the year. It's his fault.
Right.
Or something. Yeah. I don't know.
It's hard to know. Yeah, because even like, she seems to hold Harry in a high regard, but that comes with more general credibility that Harry builds in the years to come.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, if the news got out to, Neville's grandmother that the points were lost, but he was with Harry Potter, like, would that have like buffered that situation at all? Anyway, so my chief thought here was that, like, we know that Neville lives under some crushing expectations from his grandmother.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so it's like, but like, Neville also has his own trauma, Bellatrix Lestrange and his parents, of which he's not present for that, but he can see Thestrals because he's seen his uncle die?
I think that's right.
So, like, Neville's had a bunch of experiences that would have exposed him to a lot of different things, but I'm trying to figure out, like, what might be causing sort of like his general like insecurity in his own abilities, and whether or not like this Howler could have contributed to that.
Oh, it seems I for sure I think it could have.
Yeah. So
yeah, I don't know.
Poor Neville.
I mean, I guess he goes to the hospital wing after he falls off the broom. Like, could that have gotten back to her? Something that embarrassed her?
That does happen.
Because she would have sent him the remember all that very day.
Right.
You know, like, there might have been some other correspondence, and maybe then maybe none of the rest of them would have been present for it. How dare you fall off that broomstick? You know? That certainly seems to be everyone else's reaction. That's what Madam Hooch is like.
Get
down from there at once. And it's like, he clearly isn't in control.
It's like, this is all an accident. You know, he's not trying to show off.
Yeah. I suppose it's possible it didn't arrive at school and it's just happened over the breaks or something, or like as a child.
Yeah.
But it just seems like he'd be with her.
It does seem like, you know, if he's been largely raised by her, then when would he have received it if not at school? And if at school, then why wouldn't the rest of the school have known about it?
Exactly. So anyway. What did he do?
Right. And to be absolutely crystal clear for anybody who's like, guys, they're just introducing the Howler because this is the first time it's ever been, like, you know, created. And so we need some exposition to explain. We know. But like, we need to 40 steps backwards and be like, no. It's not. It's like, it's not a plot hole. There's an explanation.
This is why you guys are listening, right? Come on.
No, just for the full disclosure for those folks who were like, come on, y'all. No, we get it. Anyway, this is like one of those things where you can only imagine the kind of despair that Harry's going through as the Weasleys have so kindly taken him in over the summer and, you know, provided him with so much attention and food all the rest, you know, common things that adult parents who are supervising your existence are supposed to do. But either which way, I could only imagine the racking guilt that Harry feels over Arthur getting in trouble and all the rest that kind of comes through with his Howler.
Oh my gosh, I know. It sounds like his insides were burning with guilt. Mr. Weasley's facing an inquiry at work. It was like, oh gosh, that'd be a lot to take in for people who don't so much for you.
This is something though where, like, I am trying to, as a parent, in reading about the Howler situation and all the information that comes inside of the Howler, I am forced to wonder to myself if this is a parenting decision that I also would ever make, because I feel like it's not, you know, like it feels like this only spreads all of like the negativity to even more ears than would have known otherwise.
Do you okay? So this is interesting. As we're talking about like Dumbledore's big plan and like his like potential like fear that Harry has gone the way of fame. Like in the Howler, it mentions letter from Dumbledore last night. I thought your father would die of shame. It's like whatever Dumbledore sent, because Dumbledore like gets the truth out of them. Like they tell him what happened, and whatever he sends to Mrs. Weasley does not do anything to like explain the situation in a way that is at least positive enough to prevent the Howler.
Oh, I you see know? Where you're going. That's a good point.
You know, like, yeah, did Dumbledore, yeah. Is he just like, I think some reparations need to be made here? Or, you know,
right.
Like,
is Dumbledore like,
yeah, I know. Is he like, what did Dumbledore put in that letter that that led to Howler? Because I feel like Dumbledore is like, let me go ahead and put the absolute guilt of God into Harry right now. And,
yes,
you know.
Yes. Well, and that's the thing is that he's trying to dissuade him from this very way of thinking. And so, yeah, I don't mind that at all. I mean, I didn't even think about the fact that that the information is coming from a letter from Dumbledore, which, you know, is definitely like, it's like, okay,
right.
there's his hand in it. You know,
there
we can,
it is.
We
He's
can
there.
See him playing master yeah. puppeteer
right.
at all
I mean,
times.
She does react in this exact same way when they take the cart the first time. So there's that as well. But yes, letter from Dumbledore. There it is. He communicated, and whatever he said was not like, don't worry, I understand there was a problem, you know, I haven't gotten them in trouble or anything, you know.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yes. But I mean, we've said before that there's a decent possibility that like Molly or Arthur or both of them were sort of involved from the word go, because we go back to that scene at platform 9 3/4 where like Molly is like asking aloud to the group, like, what's the platform? And it's like, you know, the platform, you've been yeah. here a million times. So it's like, it wouldn't be, if this is again funneling into Dumbledore's big plan, it's not the first time that we've seen instance of it being directly related to like Molly and Arthur.
Right.
So that would also, I think, continue to track a little bit with what we already know about the situation at large.
Yeah. All right. So next up, they get their course schedules. They have double herbology with the Hufflepuffs, which I always point this out. I think it's funny that they have like double herbology with the Hufflepuffs and double potions with the Slytherins all the time, but never do they have classes with the Ravenclaws. you know, like, why not?
Yes. And it's like, is it just too many? Like I posed this question a bunch of times with Neville in particular, from the first book where they, what is it? Not the venomous tentacula. What is the plant they fall on when they go through the trapdoor?
Oh my gosh. The devil snare.
Devil snare. Thank you. I always get those two confused. Similarly with Justin Finch Fletchley, who we're about to meet. And
JFF.
Yeah. And Ernie McMillan. But it kind of goes back to that thought where I've suggested before that I think that like Neville was maybe supposed to be tapped to be part of the, what is otherwise what we always refer to as the Golden Trio.
Mm-hmm.
This is like one of those where it's like, was it just too much to imagine like having an additional dynamic coming from the Ravenclaws?
So oh, I know.
It's like you have
but Luna's there.
Luna's there. Yeah, no, that's true. And maybe that was the way to be like, okay, we don't have nearly enough Ravenclaw representation. Even the fact that Cho Chang eventually is the Ravenclaw like seeker,
yeah,
like gives a little bit more for that house to do that is like otherwise largely unsung for like the first few installments.
Oh,
of the
I know.
Series.
Like especially because like you could point out like I think Quirrell and Lockhart are both Ravenclaws as well. Like,
okay. Yep.
True. You can do some like extracurricular reading and can like confirm their houses. So it's like they have sort of had some spotlight action here, at least as the bad guys for the first two books.
Right.
But also, it's not brought up that they're from Ravenclaw.
Sure.
So like, even though they were like, they may as well not have been if all you did was read the book.
Yeah, that's true as well. And I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, the Ravenclaws would be difficult to illustrate, I think, a little bit in text or in this capacity, like for like a double class, just simply because like the Hufflepuffs feel like the mildly empathetic to Gryffindor house, whereas it seems like the Ravenclaws could be like the mildly empathetic or like, you know, to the Slytherin side of things. Like where if you're going to have like Gryffindor and Slytherin be the opposite end of the spectrum, I would say Hufflepuff seems like the house closer to Gryffindor and Ravenclaw seems like the house closer to Slytherin. And so I don't know if like maybe like, I guess Zacharias Smith ends up maybe being a little bit of that character as we get closer, like Order of the Phoenix.
He's the worst.
He's
kind of
like the super frustrating like Ravenclaw representative, where it's like
Zachariah Smith's Hufflepuff.
Is he Hufflepuff?
Yeah.
I literally even wrote that in my notes where I constantly confuse Justin Finch-Fleshley with Ernie McMillan and Zachariah Smith, and I, for whatever reason, anyway,
they're all right there.
Who says why aren't you in Ravenclaw if you can do a protein that's charm?
Terry Boot.
Ah, Terramis Bootimus.
Indeed.
Good save, man.
Probably his full name.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because people tend to shorten their last names as well as their first names.
Yeah, right. Good old T Boot,
Mr. Bootimus.
Yeah. Mr. Boot. Oh man, I do love the line after we get their class schedules here, where you do see Sprout walking away from the Whomping Willow. And just sort of learn that she tended to it over the night. Like, oh, yep, I'm the herbology teacher, so of course I'm the one tending to it. Because it feels like as the books progress, they give like the other, like, it feels like at some point it's just sort of Snape and McGonagall that just sort of do everything.
Sure.
You know, like, but no, here's Sprout. She's doing a thing.
Yeah. And what's funny about that is that I literally wrote in my notes, because we get the line like, Harry spotted the Whomping Willow in the distance. Several of its branches were now in slings. I literally just wrote, I always forget this detail. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like if you were to ask me, like, you know, how did Professor Sprout mend the Whomping Willow after the car crashed into it? I'd be like, she didn't?
Yeah.
Did that happen?
Was I know. It's always like Snape always says, you damaged an ancient tree. And I'm always like, they didn't damage it. Are you kidding me?
Trees are hardy, okay?
Right, exactly.
It'll be fine.
Some branches fell off, whatever. You know. Obviously, they do repair it, though, because it was damaged, as much as it also damaged Ron and Harry in the car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so then we get the line that basically, that Sprout has like dirt under her fingernails that would have made Aunt Petunia faint, whereas Gilderoy Lockhart was immaculate in sweeping robes of turquoise, which, in case you're just keeping track of all of the different colored robes, which, oh man, could we go back and Forget Me Not Blue?
Yeah.
Was that the one from Flourish and Blotts?
That one's at Flourish and Blotts. And then for the opening feast, was it like aquamarine?
Oh, that sounds right. Oh, goodness. I wish I could remember. I'm like literally doing this in real time, trying to like test myself.
Oh, man. Can you find the page where it says, I guess it would have been the Whomping Willow chapter. Oh, my gosh. Can we find it? Hold.
Aquamarine.
Aquamarine. Yep. I got it.
Amazing. Man. Way to go, team.
Many shades of blue so far.
Yes, it must go. Well, I mean, I guess the Ravenclaw could be sort of like.
I guess so, yeah.
Peeking out a little bit through that. Mm-hmm. Goes well with his flowing locks, his golden hair.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly. But anyway, yeah, so he's wearing the robes of turquoise. But so just clearly that he was doing nothing inside of the repair of the tree, and Professor Sprout was basically doing all of it.
Absolutely. Which seems obvious to Harry, at least right away, that like, you didn't do anything. I think it is interesting, though. So then, of course, we have his famous line of Harry, just, you know, being old chums, which he gets in there three times in a row. He has Harry. But I always think it is interesting that like he specifically spots Harry and like pulls him aside to like give him a stern talking to or whatever. But like what he says, like, I understand natural to want a bit more once you've had that first taste. And I blame myself for giving that to you because it was bound to go to your head. But see here, young man, you can't start flying cars and try and get yourself noticed. Like, he says, like, just calm down. All right. It's almost like he's sort of giving him good advice. A little bit. Like, it sounds like he's more concerned about him than you'd expect.
Yes. I understand what you're saying here. The question, or like the tone of voice that you read it in, is whether or not like Lockhart is worried about being like showed up by that, Harry.
Okay. Yes. Like, I have two notes. I said, oddly concerned for Harry, and then afraid of being outshone himself.
Yes. Yeah. That I feel like with his overflowing vanity, there's no ability for me to see it any other way.
Yeah.
Other than that being exactly what happened. But then even in the same piece of dialogue we get, but when I was 12, if I was just as much of a nobody as you are now. And I wrote, wrong.
Yeah.
In fact, I'd say I was even more of a nobody. And I wrote, correct.
Correct. I know. Then he says, like, all that business with he who must not be named. He's I know. It's not quite as good as winning Which Weekly's Most Charming Smile Award 5 times in a row as I have, but it's a start, Harry. It's a start. It's like, are you comparing defeating Voldemort to winning your dumb magazine award?
It is.
And saying that yours is better?
Yes. It's like, you are massive. Like, you're downplaying this situation so ridiculously that it is almost like you must be like lost inside of your own lies and think that you are, that you've been like triumphing over like challenges of like that are like comparable to Voldemort,
right?
Because that is just, it is just so not the case.
It is just so not like, the case.
Yeah. Even if all the things that he had done were true, they would still not stack up to defeating Voldemort. I know. Voldemort,
so. Yes, that is the thing. You're right. Like, even if he wasn't a liar and all the things he had done were actually true, he would still not be as famous as Harry.
Yes. Yeah. No, not even in the slightest. Yeah. So,
which, for the record, is the situation most people believe to be true.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. Yes. Yeah. Nope. Including Hermione, which is like one of those things as we continue in the chapter. I'm just sort of like, how, like, because it seems like anybody who actually knows anything would be able to tell that he's a fraud in no time flat. And Hermione knows things.
Exactly. Well, that's sort of maybe like the true danger of his, like, branding, I guess.
Maybe so.
You know, it's
maybe
like, so. You know, it's like he's done such a good job of it that even like perfectly smart people, like, people want it to be true so bad,
right,
that they just ignore the truth.
Yes. Yeah. No, that's fair. That's fair. So we'll circle back to that in just a couple of minutes, because now the next thing I want to talk about is the mandrakes.
Yes.
Which is what's happening inside of the first lesson for Herbology. This is like one of those things that I was curious if you had any thoughts about Dumbledore's big plan implications, because like, obviously Dumbledore does not know that the Chamber of Secrets is going to be open, that petrifications are going to be happening, nor that the mandrakes would be vital. But I do always find it to be just a little convenient that they happen to be working with the exact plant that is also relevant to the curing of whole book's plot.
My interpretation is that it's always just sort of been that, like, second years always start with mandrakes, and so it's just conveniently the fact that we also will need those exact things later that year. What I found kind of interesting about it is that, like, Hermione says, it's used to return people who've been transfigured or cursed to their original state. So, like, obviously they're going to use it to heal the people who have been petrified later on this year. Oh. However, prior to that, apologies, Hermione is going to be transfigured in the wrong way via the Polyjuice potion when she drinks it with the cat. And it sounds like mandrakes are what she would need to be healed, but like, for some reason she's healed from, like, they're able to heal Hermione from that pretty quickly, like, even though they can't restore the people who've been petrified yet. So it's like, they're, I don't know, maybe there just is a different way to cure her from the cat transformation, but it, like, what she says seems like it would apply.
It does. I mean, I suppose there's some possibility that this is like a like there's some amount. I mean, like, because again, to your point, if every second year, every year does this particular lesson, then maybe they have like medium stores of it that could have been available, like when Hermione is turned into a cat. Because I mean it is pretty interesting, like it is used to return people who have been transfigured or cursed their original state. Like, I'm almost curious if, like, this is something that, like, if you're even attempting to become like an animagus, if it would not be vitally important in like your training,
because you do have to keep some kind of leaf in your mouth for an entire month.
Is it a mandrake leaf? Oh my gosh, we would have to fact check that, but if that was true, that would be so interesting. Oh man. Because yeah, like the process, there's like in the Pottermore archives, like a deep dive into like what you need to do in order to become an animagus. And one of them is keeping a particular leaf under your mouth from like one full moon to the next or something like that. Some weird amount of time.
But it is a weird amount of time. I'm like, how on earth would you not chew the leaf the entire time?
I know.
Like,
it's like,
how would you not swallow it? Like, what are the magical properties of this leaf that it's not dissolving in your spit over 30 days worth of time in your mouth, where apparently you can't take it out at all? How are you eating in this time? I don't know. That has always been interesting. So while you look that up, I will also point out that I was wondering, so when, because they're making a potion, right, that they're going to like give to the petrified people. Is that right?
Yep.
But they can't like drink it because they're petrified. So it's more of like a mist kind of thing, right?
I'm so sorry to interrupt you. It is to carry a single mandrake leaf in your mouth. That is so cool.
Bam.
Man. Okay. Confirmed. Man, bam. That was fun.
Well, there you go. Maybe that's where it's return people who have been transfigured to their original state. So it's almost like whatever properties of the mandrake leaf are at work. It's almost like you're like permanently integrating that into your body, probably as the way to re-transfer from animal back into human.
It's almost like setting your like transfiguration compass to like point north or something.
Right.
Like where is like the home position intended to be? Even that's kind of curious, because then like when Sirius is a dog, like he says that like James even suggested like making the change permanent. Like it'd almost be curious if you could do the same thing in reverse, and it would like
if you went through the whole Animagus process again, but like
the other
stayed
way
as a dog the whole time.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. I have no idea. Okay, the other thing I thought was interesting is that like, so it must be some sort of more like topical potion rather than like an ingestible one.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Because like you can't like, well, I don't know. Maybe it's possible, but there must be a topical version of it, because obviously the petrified people can't drink anything.
Right.
Right. So it also reminded me, whatever potion it is, I wonder if that is what the thief's downfall actually is in Gringotts, because it is used to return people who have been transfigured or cursed to their original state. And like when they go through the thief's downfall, it untransforms Hermione, it untransfigures Ron, and it releases the Imperius curse from the goblin.
Yeah.
They quickly re-put the curse on him, but like all of those things happen.
Yeah, no, I totally think so. Yeah.
So do they just have like I'm imagining like an aquarium, like filtration system, where it's just sort of making the waterfall over and over and over.
Right. Yeah.
But it's just this potion.
Yes. It's what a clever little creation.
Yeah.
I mean, in some way, shape or form, it would have to be infused with mandrake.
Right.
It's so heavily attached to transfiguration. So, no, I love that. That's super cool. Super interesting. Neat continuity, or at least headcanon.
Headcanon continuity. Yeah.
Headcanon continuity. Okay. Very cool. Very cool.
For answering this question, Sprout gives Hermione 10 points to Gryffindor, which like, whoa, scaling much here with the points?
Yeah. So this again goes back to what we said in book one, which was basically this sentiment of like, it seems like they're giving out like, take a point for Gryffindor. And it's like one point.
One.
It's
yeah.
Like, well, that seems so slow. Like so few. And the curiosity we've suggested before is like, maybe you can earn more points the further into your schooling you are, because like it is a lot more difficult to successfully get like a question right, but then like the stakes are also then available like higher,
right?
So like you can have more points. So it'd be interesting if you're like in your seventh year, all of a sudden it was like, you know, you get a question right in one of your classes, it's like, wow, that was impressive, that's 50 points,
right?
It'd be like, okay,
all right,
let's go. And it would also prevent first years from coming in and just like ruining your house cup chances, because like they can contribute a little and detract a little, but harder for them to contribute a lot or detract a lot.
Right. It does seem like it sort of like levels out around here. Like 10 points seems like a much more common number like for the rest of the time they're at Hogwarts.
It totally
so
does.
It's also possible then that maybe for first years it's just like, all right, first year is like of course you can play in the House Cup, but like, you know.
Yeah, it's the training wheels program.
It's like the training wheels program. Yeah. You'll earn tiny points, you'll lose tiny points, like you won't be a huge liability to the seventh years who are like really trying hard here, but like second year you're in the full game, you're in training wheels are off,
training wheels are off, yep let's go.
or it just became easier to say 10 points instead of one at a time or whatever.
That's also true.
Through the Gryffindor is sponsored by Rosetta Stone. Y'all, I've got to say, I love international travel. I don't know if there's anything that opens your eyes and mind more to different walks of life than immersing yourself inside of new ones, but one hesitation I always have about going somewhere new is how to best navigate the differing languages. But that's where Rosetta Stone can help. Because for me, it's not just about like the fear of getting lost, although to be fair, it's not a concern either. But to me, the immersion goes so much further than simply being somewhere else. I want to engage with and respect the locale by communicating in their tongue, not my own. And that's what's so great about Rosetta Stone. They provide 25 different languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, and more. And they use such an intuitive approach coach designed for you to pick up the language naturally. So you're really learning to speak, listen, and the one I always find the most fascinating, think in a new language. And what's even better is that when you sign up, it's for life. Yeah, a lifetime membership. Because let's face it, we can only travel to so many new places, but so fast. But with all the time in the world, you can be ready for any adventures ahead. Don't put off learning that new language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Through the Gryffindor listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off your unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
What if I told you that you can support your blood pressure and healthy CoQ10 levels with 2 chews a day? The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. That's like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 supports your cardiovascular health. Visit RadioBeats.com and find out how you can get a free 30-day supply on bundles and save 15% with the promo code DEAL.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yep. Let's see. We learn the cry of the mandrake is fatal to anyone who hears it, which is, to me, I was like, wow, 12-year-olds are dealing with potentially fatal creatures here. That's wow. Okay.
Yeah. The only
this better
thing
be some good. I would really reiterate that, Sprout. Like, really.
Yes. Yeah. The only thing standing between you and death right now is potentially a fluffy pink pair of earmuffs.
Right. Yeah.
Magically enhanced, hopefully.
Magically enhanced. Yes. So anyway, then we get the earmuffs, which do seem to be magically enhanced so that you don't hear anything, which just makes me, bothered so much more that Neville faints in the books, because it's like, they shouldn't be able to hear anything because magic.
Right.
Faints in the movie, sorry. There is no mention of Neville being good or bad about the mandrakes in the books, which is just another slap that it happens in the movie, because it's not like, oh yeah, it happened in the books.
Right. Yeah. Or that even Neville was relevant to the scene.
Yeah, Neville's really not at all. So I feel like there could have been a line in here that would have been like, oh, Neville finished potting his mandrake immediately or whatever. Something like that, but doesn't matter. Apparently, also, we say fatal, but apparently these are babies, so they won't kill you yet. But they'll just, I guess, make you pass out or something.
Right.
Then, yeah, we get to meet good old JFF, Justin Finch Fletchley.
Yes. Yeah, who's like a bit of a character. He seems like at least Muggle-born from one side of the family, because he says that my name was down for Eton. This is always like one of those things that probably makes a lot more sense if you live in the UK. But here in America, I always was curious if like Eton was like another wizarding school somewhere.
Oh.
Or like it didn't occur to me that this was like a like I don't know it as like a known boarding school otherwise.
Oh, right.
But I do think that Eton is like a fairly highly prestigious Muggle boarding school.
There you go.
I think specifically for boys, but I don't know. I didn't get that far into my fact checking, but I think that is the case.
Okay.
Otherwise, he seems to similarly kind of be like fascinated with everything to do with Lockhart's antics. He's got the line here. It says, I'd have died of fear if I'd been cornered in a telephone booth by a werewolf, but he stayed cool and zap. Just fantastic.
Yeah. Okay, bro.
Yeah.
Yes, it totally sold on it. It surprised me. He says, of course, a mother was slightly disappointed, but since I made her read Lockhart's books, I think she's begun to see how useful it would be to have a fully trained wizard in the family, which to me is interesting because they're in year two. So like he went through his whole first year and his mom was still like, I don't know about this. not sold.
Are we sure? I mean, it kind of feels like how the Dursleys might be if like Dudley had been accepted, where it would be sort of like they'd be at war between being like honored that their child had been accepted and also like I don't know if I like
I don't know what, if what, I what, like this of course I have to imagine after like does he show is he still around no he is he continues to go to Hogwarts
who's that
Justin Finch Fletchley, because he's in the Dumbledore's army.
I think so, yeah.
Which is almost surprising, because it's like, apparently his mom is on the fence, and all that sells her is the Lockhart books, but then, one, this year her son is going to be attacked by a basilisk, and two, it's going to turn out that Lockhart was a fraud, so you should be like, Justin, you're still at Eton, let's go.
Turns out this year has not been safe. The one person I was able to look up to is a fraud, so we're not doing good.
No, you're not going back there.
You know, what's interesting, though, is I even wrote the note, and I mentioned before, that he reminds me of Ernie McMillan, but even his first ever, introduction reminds me of Ernie. Like, me and you always joke, there's this, like, line in Half-Blood Prince where Ernie, like, catches up with Harry, Ron, and Hermione. He's like, us old D.A. lags.
Yeah.
You know, and it's sort of like, oh, we go way back.
To last year. Several months ago.
Also, like, oh, you're, like, 16, bro. So yeah. Like, cool it. But anyway, so, like, his intro is, I mean, just about as friendly as you could ask of anybody. I mean, he's immediately just like, know who you are, of course, the famous Harry Potter, and you're Hermione Granger, always topping everything, and even throws Ron a bone and says, wasn't it you in the flying car?
Yeah.
like, I mean, Ron's not super, like, pleased that this is coming up in this particular occasion, but at bare minimum, this is somebody attempting to be like, hey, I know all of your names, and I know a thing about each of you.
Right.
Which is not the worst way to, like, make friends.
I know. He's doing good. I mean, he maybe should have gone for the chess game, but...
Maybe, you know, so, yeah. Maybe. That's a good point, yeah.
Like, read the room, dude. Didn't you hear the howler? Or it should be like, yeah. Like, look, Ron, clearly everyone's already forgotten about the howler. Like, chill your bones, man.
Yeah, also true. People just thought it was cool.
People just thought it was funny. Yeah, like, does that make it worse? Apparently Ron is so embarrassed by the howler that he refuses to even ask for a fixed wand for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
Like, it must be so evident that he cannot do magic, you know? Like, what does he think? The fact that he goes the whole year without asking for a new wand is, like, bananas to me.
It is bananas, and this feels another one of those sort of writing challenges where maybe you come up with the idea that, like, of having Lockhart's wand backfire at some point in time, and so, like, the howler is almost an installment so that we are able to, like, understand Mrs. Weasley's frustration is at such a high level that Ron doesn't even find, like, enough comfort in asking for a new wand, and it's otherwise, like, then at wizard school with one arm tied behind his back because he doesn't have the most essential tool for doing wizard stuff.
Yeah.
So it's like, it almost feels like you're like, if you're going to commit to, like, the backfiring Ron wand later, you have to find a way to pre-solve the question that is, why doesn't Ron just have a new wand?
I know, and right? It's like,
this is as close as we get to an answer.
This is as close as we get.
He's too afraid to ask his parents.
Too afraid to ask, and he's got spello tape. You know, that's gonna that'll fix it.
Yeah,
right?
This reminds me so much of we watched, like, Rugrats growing up a lot, and like, Stew Pickles is a big inventor, mm-hmm. and, you know, solves problems with rubber bands, bubble gum, and scotch tape and such, duct tape. Yeah, and this feels like just Stew Pickles.
Just tape it back together. This is also like a pun that goes over, I think, American heads, because, like, spello tape, whenever I read it, I'm like, yeah, that's a funny name for, like, magical tape. They do spells. Spello tape, of course. But in like England, like what we call scotch tape, they call cello tape. So spello tape is like a play on that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Man, that's there not me go. Learning that for the first time ever.
There
okay.
you go.
Okay, very interesting. Very interesting. So we're seeing the issues that Ron is having with this particular wand, where they're trying to transfigure beetles into buttons, which is kind of an interesting one, where later on in the chapter, we know that Hermione has, like, a whole handful of little perfectly transfigured buttons. And I'm like, hey, those poor beetles.
Jeez, man.
It's like, can't you, like, break them free of their being inside of...
I know one thing about Hermione Granger is that she hates beetles.
It's true.
Turn these beetles into buttons, lock that beetle in a jar.
Yeah, absolutely no empathy towards these beetles.
No beetles.
Whatsoever. Yep, yep. So maybe that's just a little... I'm joking, but maybe it's foreshadowing.
Yeah, maybe. You know, that's right.
For Rita Skeeter to come in book four.
Mm-hmm.
Something to look out
this
for.
This is like when Rita Skeeter in, like, book four starts being such a problem. It's like, why... It's like it seems like she would be problematic the first 3 years too. Like, certainly she's, like, writing articles and stuff now.
Yes, that is a good point.
You know, and where's the Rita Skeeter articles about Sirius Black? Like, certainly she had things to say about that.
Almost certainly.
What a bungling the ministry is doing, or something or other.
Wow. Yeah, good. I mean, what a headline.
Exactly.
I can see it already.
What a bungling.
What a bungling. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it definitely seems like Rita should be showing up, but maybe they're just not, like, it's not like relevant stories to what they're dealing with. And yeah. So like they're just not like making the headlines. And like for most of the series, like through like with Sirius, like there could be all sorts of headlines about him and they could be like super incriminating and stuff, but like none of them really have like any empathy towards Sirius. So they're not like, wow, can you believe what this person's writing?
What Skeeta says?
Yeah.
So maybe I guess in the wider Wizarding World, things are just pretty calm right now.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So next thing we get though is we get to meet the boy that Harry saw at the Sorting Hat ceremony the night before, which happens to be the one and only Colin Creevy. Mm-hmm. Which is maybe possibly like an indication that like Harry himself is just cursed with bad luck, because in an entire year's worth of schooling where the primary objective is to not lean into his fame, there happens to be a new kid in his house who is all about emphasizing Harry's fame.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought this is so, she just immediately comes up and says, can I take a picture? We sign it. Yeah. That's pretty fun. Also he says like someone in his dormitory said, if I develop the film in the right potion, the pictures will move, which is just interesting because it means that like the fact that the pictures move has something to do with the development of the film. I always thought it maybe had more to do with the camera, because whenever you see the cameras like in the movies, or I think even in the book, it like describes them as being like smoking and looking like very old-fashioned cameras.
Yeah, we were seeing that during Flourish and Blotch chapter where the photographer is taking photos.
But they're like much more modern film cameras, you know, like even in the 90s, like our dad had a camera that shot on film.
Yeah.
You know, like it doesn't have to be some giant flashbulb smoking thing to get a film picture if it's just the potion that makes it move.
I know. I wonder if maybe the possible difference here is that he's using a muggle camera.
Yeah.
And so like maybe because it's a muggle camera versus like a wizarding camera, like you have to use a potion that is then influencing the muggle film, and you're almost getting like a live photo.
I suppose. So you think like a wizard camera would, there are wizard. Okay. I see what you mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like wizard cameras would just automatically have moving pictures.
Exactly.
I see.
Yeah. This is more, because it seems like he's muggle born and, you know, his dad's a milkman.
Does it say that in this one?
Yes.
He's a milkman. He couldn't believe it either. Yeah.
So I'm taking loads of pictures to send home to him. Honestly, really adorable.
Oh,
I mean, like,
yes.
You know, for any 11-year-old to be like, I can't wait to send photos back home to mom and dad. It's like, if like now being a parent, if there was a world where Addie at 11 is somewhere and she wants to send me photos from there, like that will just fill my heart with sheer glee.
Oh, I know, right? I feel a little bad for Colin here, because if he just like managed to catch Harry like in the common room or something like at night, like I'm sure Harry would have just been like, oh sure, that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, Harry's a nice enough human being. Yeah. Like it's the problem is that, again, going back to Harry being cursed, is that Draco Malfoy shows up inside of this conversation, followed by Gilderoy Lockhart.
Like, are you kidding me right now, bro?
It is like the worst two possible people to show up while signed photos are being discussed. But I do love this one particular line from Colin, who we know ends up being quite a brave character. He's a member of Dumbledore's army. He dies at the Battle of Hogwarts. But Malfoy, who is now going to be like, you know, his upperclassman, it sounds like Colin's kind of a small kid anyway, stands up for Harry to Malfoy and says, "You're just jealous," piped up Colin, whose entire body was about as thick as Crab's neck. You know, that honestly, I find that to be like pretty admirable. Like, he's clearly in the right house.
I mean, he's definitely in the right house, and it is pretty brave of him to do it. And also, not for nothing, he's 1,000% correct.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
Malfoy's like, jealous. And it's like, yes, you're so jealous.
Yeah, that is exactly what is happening right now. And this muggle kid just caught you in one.
He's like, who didn't? Yeah, what does he say? Of what? I don't know. I don't want a foul scar right across my head. Thanks. It's like, yeah, but you do want all the attention that it gets you. So
not to mention, it's a pretty baller scar.
Pretty baller, I know. It's like lightning bolt shape. Yeah. Come on, dude. Right,
seriously.
Yeah. Ron threatens him to eat slugs, which is, of course, later a spell he's actually going to try and cast at Malfoy, which will backfire and hit himself and make himself puke slugs.
Yep.
Gross.
Yep. Trying his best, though.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, then of course, like I just mentioned, Lockhart stumbles into the situation and once again just has more advice, you know, for Harry about how like you're not quite at this stage of your career. It isn't sensible. Looks a tad big headed is what Lockhart says to him. And this is like one of those lines like where he specifically says at this stage of your career, and this is such like projecting Lockhart's own like beliefs, intentions, and values onto Harry, that he is assuming that Harry is developing his own fame-based career at like as a 12-year-old.
Yeah, like that all of this is very intentional.
Yes, of course.
I want to say like it's there is a thing I think there in whatever like the ebook chapter about Lockhart where like even as a student, like I guess because is he muggle-born? Is that right, I want to say?
I can't remember.
It might be the case.
Maybe he's the only wizard.
Yeah, in his family. Yeah, like there were like squibs and then him.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Which possibly is like feeding into this like this inflated sense of like, ah, yes, I am better than my siblings or something like
right.
that.
But then he like arrives at Hogwarts and like fails to realize that like everyone else there is just as magical as him. And yes.
Right.
I want to say he tries to pull a stunt where he like writes his name in cursive across the entire Quidditch field.
Yep.
I think.
Yep.
And it's like, I feel like when you read about it in the book, it's like no one's really impressed, but I feel like that'd be such a hilarious prank in real life.
Oh,
like if you managed to pull that off, like, right. Like, I don't know. I feel like maybe that would have earned you some popularity points.
It could have. I mean, this is like, I feel like if Fred and George just weren't beaters on the team already, then they probably would have done that.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Like, yeah. They put up a giant, like Weasley wizard wheezes up in the sky before they leave.
Right. You know? Maybe they would have done like, Pooh.
Yeah. It was like every time we go to play Quidditch, the Weasleys have just written another message out there. So anyway, Lockhart shows up. I'm almost surprised Snape doesn't show up in this scene too.
I know. Why not?
Potter giving out signed photos. That'd be 1,000 points from Gryffindor.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh man, let's see. I love Lockhart just name dropping at every or just listing all of his accomplishments off at all or because we get into his class next, right?
Yeah,
they go into his class and he's holding up his books, Travels of Trolls. I love his little introduction. He says, "Me, Gilderoy Lockhart, Order of Merlin, third class," which is like the only other time you mention the other classes is that he's not first class.
He's not. Yeah, I underline third class.
Too. Yes.
It's like, yeah.
Whoops.
Weird flex, but okay.
Weird flex, yeah. Honorary member of the Dark Force Defense League and 5-time winner of Witch Weekly's Most Charming Smile Award. But I don't talk about that. It's like, I love the "but I don't talk about that." It's like, it's come up twice in this chapter, bro.
Yes, yeah. Like, oh man. But all of these things, it's like, it's pretty funny because it's like, yeah, Order of Merlin third class, which to me is almost sort of like, the whatever governing body that hands out the Order of Merlins knows that he's a fraud, and they're like, and like the public is almost demanding like him be awarded something.
Right.
Like, fine, we'll give him the lowest one.
Right.
You know. Like,
all
and
right.
Then, even then, he's an honorary member of the Dark Force Defense
right.
League.
Yes.
And his only other like major accolade is winning a magazine thing. So it's like none of these awards are as prestigious as he's making it sound like they are.
Oh, I know. Yes, but I don't. This is also. I think this entire line is just like it is like word for word in the movies.
Yes, it
you
is.
Yeah, it's just like the delivery is so good. It's like I didn't get rid of the banded banshee by smiling at her.
I just wrote LOL next to it.
Oh my god,
I can't stop laughing.
Oh my god,
one.
I know. I highlighted this whole thing and just wrote gold next to it. It's like, this is one of my favorite like just introductions ever. It's just like he's so smarmy and stupid.
Oh my gosh.
Let's see.
They take the quiz.
They take the quiz. 54 quiz. They take the 54 question survey about Lockhart and his little focus group here.
All right. So here's me answering. 1. What is Gilderoy's favorite color? Gilderoy Lockhart's favorite color, lilac. What is Gilderoy Lockhart's secret ambition? I put hair care products. What, in your opinion, is Gilderoy Lockhart's greatest achievement to date? I just wrote, wow.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
It's like, oh, come on. It's like, you know, that is like just inviting compliments in a way that is so like absurd.
I know, right? Oh man, if everyone would like to leave us some comments down in the YouTube about what do you think is our greatest accomplishment to date? You know, just whatever you think.
Whatever comes to mind.
Whatever comes to mind, you know? Oh, man. No, don't do that. Let's see. And then let's see. He goes on to kind of answer all of these questions for us. So I clearly state in chapter 12 that my ideal birthday gift would be harmony between all magic and non-magical peoples. Which he's talking about wanderings with werewolves here, which like obviously he's a fraud anyway. But it's like a surprisingly progressive stance towards werewolves if you like. Have to consider like what the situation must have been like if he wants harmony between magical and non-magical people in a book called Wanderings with Werewolves. Then it sounds to me like context clues would suggest that the conflict in the book is between a werewolf, the magical people, and the non-magical people, muggles,
right?
So he wants harmony between these groups of people, but the conflict would have been between a werewolf. So it's like,
is he advocating for werewolf
he's
rights?
He's advocating for werewolf rights.
Okay.
In a, you know, illegitimate way, but it's there.
He's like, I mean, at least we can get on board with the messaging. If nothing else, no matter how much of a fraud he is.
Yes.
I did highlight the very next line though, that says, cause that is his favorite, like gift. Is that what he wants? Ideal birthday gift.
Yes.
I wouldn't say no to a large bottle of Ogden's Old Fire whiskey. That's just trivia for me. It's just like, okay, if not, harmony between magic and non-magic people, then Ogden's Fire whiskey. Okay. Remember that one.
That's his real answer. Yes. And then this is I love this line right down here, and it says his secret ambition is to rid the world of evil and market my own range of hair care potions. And it's like, what is just especially hilarious about this secret ambition is that Harry Potter. Literally does rid the world of evil, and his entire fortune is built on a line of hair care potions.
So Harry lives out
Lockhart's dream.
Right. Yes. Also, you're calling this a secret ambition.
What's my secret ambition? It's like definitionally impossible to know.
It's like I would literally write, if it's a secret,
right? I know, right? Come on now. This is a trick question.
I shouldn't expose you here in this pop quiz.
Also, why would you keep that a secret?
I know. Yeah. That would be like my secret ambition is to run for president of the United States. I shall tell no one.
It's like, I'll probably get that. People will just know.
They'll just know. That, I mean, at some point in time, I will get there.
I'll win the write-in.
Yeah, exactly. I'll win the write-in
based on being such a good person. People are like, it has to be Ben. He's not even campaigning. It has to be Ben.
And then in my acceptance speech, I will just say, little did all of you know, this was in fact my own secret ambition. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for making it possible.
Yes, indeed. Anyway, so that's...
I humbly accept.
Oh, man.
Oh, my gosh.
Then he dives into what feels like could be a decent opener for...
It does.
Like a defense against the dark arts professor. He says, now be warned. It's my job to arm you against the foulest creatures known to wizard kind. You may find yourselves facing your worst fears in this room. Know only that no harm can befall you whilst I'm here. All I ask is that you remain calm. So, I mean, kind of hilariously is like, I mean, if Lupin had said this before the Boggart lesson, it would be just dead true.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Because like he says, you may be facing your worst fears in this room. Like in year three, at least in the year as we can tell, based on like in Fantastic Beasts, Dumbledore's also teaching Defense Against the Dark Arts and is also doing the Boggart lesson.
Yeah.
It would suggest that like later, possibly this week, he would be teaching the Boggart lesson to the third year.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, okay.
You'd think.
Yeah.
Also, like there is a bit of like, in spite of himself, Harry leaned around his pile of books for a better look at the cage. It's like Harry has pretty much, I think, already decided that Lockhart is a fraud, but it's like, I think it's a great demonstration of like Lockhart's showmanship that like Harry's like, wait, what do you have here? Like, okay, I'm interested. I don't believe you, but like...
There's a thing?
We're going to have a thing? Right. And then like, but again, it's like, what kind of delusions does he have here? Like, he has this Cornish pixie thing, and like, either he thinks the kids are just going to be able to do it no problem, or like that, like, but like, he... knows he can't do it.
Oh, I
so
know.
Like,
yeah.
What is he doing?
I know. It's like this is so like not a good play. Like
I know.
It's like to the point where it's like you just have to ask how delusional this man actually is.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's the line, though. It says, the pixies were electric blue and about 8 inches high with pointed faces and voices so shrill it was like listening to a lot of budgies arguing. I just had to look up what a budgie was because I was like, what is a budgie? It's small, colorful parrots.
Oh, parrots.
Parrots. Okay. Yeah, yes, indeed. So for I imagine squirrels.
Squirrels?
Yeah, like budgies.
Oh, budgies.
Yeah.
I was thinking like a bird, which I guess a parrot is.
A parrot is a bird. Yeah. Yeah. So you were dead on.
There we go.
Yep. So you got that.
I am almost surprised, though. It does say within minutes, half the class was sheltering under desks. Like, I am almost surprised that they can't handle them in a way.
I know. Yeah. Because like the fact that like Seamus knows what they are, he's just sort of like, well, they're not very dangerous, are they? Like, you know, this, I'm trying to imagine what like a real life version of this type of thing would be. Like, you know, like if somebody were to like uncover like a crate full of kittens.
You know what? Maybe squirrels is accurate.
Yeah.
If
someone
was like a cage of squirrels, you'd be like, well, worst fears confirmed. But if someone had a giant cage of like 50 squirrels and was like, let's see what you make of them, and just let them free, I'd be like, whoa, okay, hold on.
There are so many squirrels right now.
So many squirrels. I guess that would be, you know what? It's a pretty fair comparison because I don't think I would know what to do.
That's a good point. And squirrels are otherwise like, it's really funny to me that you could like walk down the street and the squirrel could be right next to you and you in no way, shape or form panic at all.
I know. But if there were 50 squirrels in your classroom, be like, this is too many squirrels.
This is a lot of squirrels.
This is a lot of squirrels.
How did you get them in the cage?
Did you go to the cage? Why are they out of the cage?
Yep. Yeah. That's okay. Really funny. The next thing is obviously everybody's having a really difficult time. Neville's being lifted into the air by his ears, which sounds just incredibly painful. Lockhart is like, okay, come on now. They're only pixies. And he bellows into the air, pesky, pisky, pesternomi, which I think it's sort of like a Mad Gabs almost of just like pesky pixies, pester no me. Like no me, like don't pester me anymore.
Right.
These pesky pixies pester me no more.
It's like he's trying to like morph English words into sounding Latin.
Yeah.
You know, which is like what most of the spells are like based in.
Right.
So it's like, but all you did was just sort of mispronounce a bunch of English words rather than say magic words.
It's a lot more similar to Ron's spell to turn Scabbers yellow on the train.
Yeah.
So it's like in that vein. It's like, and sure enough, it had absolutely no effect. So does nothing at all. And at this point in time, the bell rings, which does the bell always ring? That was like one of those where I was like, the bell?
I think so.
Is there a bell? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure enough. That's fine then. But yeah, so then Lockhart runs out the door and catches sight of Harry, Ron, and Hermione, and is just basically like, well, I'll just leave it to you three to nip the rest of them back into their cage. This is because his wand has been taken by the pixies and thrown out the window, which I find to be kind of hilarious because I'm pretty sure, actually I fact-checked it before we did this, when they are recruiting Lockhart to come and like go into the Chamber of Secrets with them, it says Lockhart was blasted backwards, falling over his trunk. His wand flew into the air. Ron caught it and flung it out the open window. And I was like, yeah, this comes back to haunt him later. It's like, man, my wand went out that same window again.
Ron's getting a lot of ideas. He's like, oh, Ron, what, wand out the window? Got it. I'll use that later. Eat slugs? Got it. I'll use that later.
Yeah. We're getting like lots of setup for Ron for the rest of the story. Anyway, but then like Ron is just basically like, can you believe this guy? And Hermione is still just sort of being like he's got all the, like, he just wants us to have a hands-on experience. But like, this is like one of those where Hermione will then go on to say, you've read all of his books. Look at all those amazing things he's done. And Ron says, he says he's done. And it's like, Ron is just like, you know,
right,
from like a student's perspective, he has figured it out very fast.
Oh my gosh. I know. It's like, I wrote that down. I said, good instincts, Ron.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's just like, it's a great example of like the difference between Ron and Hermione here, like what Ron is bringing to the table. It's like Ron can just like see right through it immediately, and like Hermione is like, it's in books, like it has to be true, he's a teacher, like all respect must be given at all times. And Ron's just like, you know, how about I look at the situation plainly and recognize the truth of the matter?
This is not being able to see the forest for the trees type of situation where Hermione is, she's entrusted books as a reliable like source of information and like for good reason for so long.
Right.
And it's like all of a sudden the thing that has been so reliable is steering her wrong. And it's
right.
like she just can't see past the books. But it is like one of those things where I think I can't remember if this is just a movie quote or not, but like I think at some point in time Hermione says like, "I'm highly logical. It allows me to see past like all of the other, you know, like details or information and cut straight through to the actual whatever."
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing a bad job paraphrasing yeah. this particular thing, but she says like she's not smart, she's highly logical.
Yeah, she says that about the potions. Well, she describes the potions as logic puzzle.
Okay, yeah, yeah, you're right. Yeah. But this seems like she has let logic be thrown out the window.
Yeah, right. Yeah. In the name of being enamored by Gilderoy.
Yes, indeed.
So,
anyway, but that does bring us to the end of Chamber of Secrets, Chapter 6. Do we have a review for the day?
We do have a review for the day from WGill628.
Hey!
Here we go. All right, so... says, absolutely love the podcast. It's so fun to listen to the stories with such a fine-tooth comb focus on each chapter. The theories that are discussed are so fascinating, too. My husband asked me these questions while we were listening, and I wasn't sure of the answer. So this is the question they have for us then. Could it be possible that Scabbers was a real rat when he was with Percy in the first two books? Then when Sirius escapes, Pettigrew kills the rat and takes his place in the Weasley household. Is Scabbers missing his toe mentioned before book 3? This could be a bit of an explanation for why Fern and George never questioned Peter Pettigrew being in Harry and Ron's dorm, since it didn't happen until the third year. So, I don't think it is. I'm pretty sure by the time we meet Scabbers in book 1, he's already missing the toe, and it is definitely Peter. But I don't hate the idea that like Percy went to Diagon Alley and picked out a rat and had a real rat that Peter then. Replaced,
yeah. Because yeah. I think the kind of like the big explanation is that like Peter wanted to live with a wizarding family that would kind of like provide him with a continuous source of like news about what was going on in like the comings and goings of the wizarding world. So I feel like it makes the most sense. The other thing too, I think, is that there's like sort of like the unusually long lifespan of Scabbers, which I guess could still come with some amount of replacement, but
yeah, it would have to be then a bit of a coincidence that like if that's true, then the coincidence would have to be that the very year Percy got a rat, like Peter came in and just like replaced himself as the rat
right away
because I think there is a line where like Ron says like Scab has been in my family for, and Sirius interrupts and he's like 12 years
cures a long life for come and go
Yeah.
good Sirius impersonation.
Thank you.
I can like feel Sirius's like frustration with like, like
you see?
Do you see the timing?
Yeah.
Awfully fortunate, is it not?
Yeah.
No, that is super funny. It's a great question though, and it would bring me a lot of comfort versus the scenario where like, because that's the other thing too, is that like Peter is just like, I mean, it seems like such an abysmal existence, like to subject yourself to.
Yeah.
To just being someone's pet for so long.
It does.
Like, you know, in this particular capacity. And to be kind of like a sucky pet too. Like,
yeah. Oh, I know. Yeah. There is a I don't think I'm pretty sure as long as we've known Scabbers, as long as Harry knows Scabbers, he's Peter the whole time. As for your question about what like could that explain why Fred and George don't see Peter on the map, our theory there is that the Marauders don't show up on the map except to the other Marauders.
Yes, and this has sort of been the theory just simply because it would be a way for, like, if the map were to fall into the wrong hands, it would protect specifically the Marauders from anybody attempting to use it against them.
Right, like Snape or something.
Right.
Which the map specifically insults. I mean, that's like we don't know for sure whether the map will only insult Snape in particular because the four of them just openly disliked him, or if it would insult anyone who read it, but we just don't ever see it do it again.
Yeah.
So it could be some sort of built-in defense mechanism there. And that would explain it. So if you're wondering about then in the movie how Harry sees Peter on the map, that's not canon. That just puts it in the movie because they didn't want to explain it in any other way. They also don't explain in the movie who the Marauders are.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's like one of those things where I've wanted to make a video for a long time, which is just sort of like details that the movies leave out that I'm curious, like how they impact non-book read people. Because there's, I mean, like the other really big one is that like in Deathly Hallows, Harry just has the mirror, the broken piece of mirror that like connects him to Aberforth.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like if you're just watching the movies and you're like, where did the mirror come from? Like,
right.
What's the deal with the mirror? Why do they have that? It's like, does that like, I have no idea. It's like, I can't not watch it without knowing all the context that I know from the books and so many rereads and everything.
But yeah.
Like, sometimes I'm like, if you were just watching the movie, are you kind of like, wait, what? Like,
hey, it's almost like they're relying on you being like, are we supposed to know about that? He must have had, I don't know. I guess I just forgot where he got it.
Yeah. Maybe he had it.
Yeah. Maybe he had it. Okay. It's been like a year since I saw the last one, so whatever.
No big deal. It'll be fine. It'll make sense when it makes sense.
Or else they're just like, yeah, anyone who doesn't know, they'll be there with someone who knows, and they'll be like, what was that mirror? And they'll be like, Sirius gave it to him in year five.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yep. Okay.
I don't remember that, but I believe you.
Good deal. I'm on board.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that'll be, it'll be interesting to see if they ever do subsequent variations, which it sounds like they're going to, like how much more they will be able to maintain true to form. Cause the proposed HBO show, at the very least, seems like it is being described as a 10-year project with 7 seasons, one for each book.
So yeah.
It does seem like there should be lots of room for details like this to make it in there.
But it does, anyway, yes. So
we've gone on such a deep tangent at this point. So
we have. So yeah. Anyway, long story short, it is possible that Peter replaced an existing rat. I think he's just been Peter the whole time.
I think so too.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where I'd be at. But great question either which way. And in the future, if you'd ever like to leave a review or question for us for a future episode, we would absolutely love it. So
yeah.
Definitely go to any of the places, Spotify, wherever pods are cast really, and leave yourself a review for us to find. It does help the show with a little bit of discovery, which is always great and a good way to kind of support us.
So I know. Yeah. We're well on our way to our very hopeful 100,000 subscribers over on YouTube. So if you haven't subscribed yet, please go ahead and click that button. Just for the lols, man. Just to get us a button. You know?
I know. It'd be so cool. We could put it on our we have a set here. If you've only ever listened to us, we also have like a video version on YouTube that you can see. Like you can see us sitting here in our chairs.
Yeah.
It's highly riveting stuff.
I know, really, yeah. Very, very riveting stuff. We have a flickering lamp behind me and stuff, and a sword. There's a sword!
Yeah.
So, you know, if you want to check it out. Otherwise, that is going to bring us to the end of Chapter 6. Join us next week for Chapter 7, Mudbloods and Murmurs, as we travel once more through the Gryffindor.
Today's episode was edited by Ethan Edgehill. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.